This is the B-Team Podcast, a daily recap of what you missed this morning on Mississippi Superstar Country Kicks 96,
a Boswell Media station.
Join us here for behind-the-scenes information, exclusive show content, and more. Listen live at kicks96news.com.
To become a sponsor, appear as a guest on the show, or for more information, contact them at btpodcastms@gmail.com.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Brian Bemo Montgomery.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
Rick Riley.
Don't everybody thank me at once.
This is the B-Team Podcast.
The B-Team Podcast.
We're here.
It's the B-Team Podcast. We thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, B-Team Podcast is a rebroadcast of some of the things that you got to hear today on Mississippi Superstar Country. Kicks 96, we invite you to listen live weekdays from 6 until 9 in a very special edition of the podcast as we return to the innovator of Hersdays, because it was a year ago, the very first guest I ever had in this building, sitting to my left, she who is a stranger to basically nobody here in Central Mississippi, worldwide. This is your big chance. The 7 people who listen in Austria are going to love you. The 8 that are in Germany will definitely go crazy. And the 6 and that are in Liverpool.
Because you know they don't have good music that comes out of Liverpool.
Yeah, just a band of insects and stuff. Yeah. Brother Breck Riley hanging in the background today, as here we are with 3 peoples and 2 mics, which sounds very bizarre, but singer-songwriter, a staple here with regards to our own Mississippi Songwriter of the Year, where you have placed in the top 3 the last 2 years.
Yes.
And it is amazing to have you with us. I have a huge thing for Patsy Cline. When I was going through and talking to people here in the area, listening to the singles, what got me most about you was you are fearless when it comes to the songs that you'll tackle. And I had never heard a female ever sing Hello Darling in my life. And
that was a feat.
You can take anything and make it sound like your own, which of course is what every artist and songwriter inspires to do. But you got to talk to me about Every Breath You Take, because if you didn't know better and you didn't know that that was a Police song and that this was a cover, the way you sang it, the arrangement, it was flawless. It sounds like a damn country song.
I know. We put the complete twist on it.
How did you do that?
Well, when I was in the studio, I had Sir Fred Cannon. He's the one who helped produce it. And Paul Buono did all the mixing and whatnot and made it what it is. He's a magician.
Mm.
And Fred kind of threw this song at me, and I think I laughed at him when he told me about it. You mean the Stalker song? Yeah, that one. I was like, okay, let's listen to it and let's see what we can do with it.
Uh-huh.
And so we slowed it down and put some twang on it, put some steel guitar, and then recorded it. Yeah. And it sounded better than I imagined it would, honestly.
Dude, that is probably, with the exception of the title cut, my favorite thing on there. Let's talk a little bit about you. Of course, you're born in the business. Your mom, of course, paving the way for you.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite stories is your introduction to your first performance, because the last time you were here, we talked about that, but we talked about the difficulties, not so much from you performing, but the band playing the Patsy Cline. tell that story.
Oh, yeah. Well, little did I know, I was 9 years old, and it was some sort of Memorial Day or something like that in Columbia, Alabama. And there was a Nashville band Mama had behind her on a flatbed trailer in the middle of a football field.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm out there playing with the boys, playing football and getting muddied up and grass stains all over the place. And I got a picture. I need to send you the picture that I got from it.
<It's> okay. <so great. laughs> I got to see that.
I'm on stage and I'm singing Patsy Cline, because that's the one song that I knew backwards and forwards, because Mom always would listen to classic country music and she could sound just like Patsy Cline. So I grew up with that and I fell in love with her sound and her voice.
Right.
So Patsy Cline and was my artist, my go-to. And Crazy by Patsy Cline, written by Willie Nelson,
mm-hmm.
was apparently not the easiest song to play.
Right.
But at that time, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Mom told me if I was ever brought on stage to sing with her at any show, just to walk up to the stage, grab the mic, and say, "You want to sing Crazy by Patsy Cline," and B flat. B flat.
Yeah, B flat.
B flat.
Yeah.
A terrible key to play in, apparently, because you could hear the audible sighs behind me. They're like, oh, God. This girl. We can't say no. She's nine. We look terrible if we say no. Like, no, do it in C. No, we're doing it in B flat. So I got up there and I sang. It was a good 5,000 people out there. I didn't even notice them, honestly. That's why I love spotlights, even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
When I play on big stages, I'm like, give me a spotlight. Not because I'm self-absorbed, it's just I don't like to see all the people.
Right.
Because it's terrifying when
you
have that many people looking at you. So just got the spotlight on my face. I sang the song, finished it, handed the mic over to Mom, popped that sucker back in my mouth, and I started running with the boys again. So I do need to send you that picture, though, because Mom's got me up there on stage, both hands on the mic, and I'm just singing.
Oh, my gosh. I wanted to talk to you about an opportunity that you had recently to work with some kids in June at the Maxim Meridian, of course, where the 2021 Mississippi Songwriter of the Year competition was. Explain that experience to me and what it felt like to have these students who were selected to work with you by teachers. What was that like for you and what kind of things did you go over? Because I can only imagine having a room full of students with their big eyes looking at you like, learn me.
It was insane because I've never had that experience before, and I've never been offered to be a part of something like that, to maybe guide kids into how to songwrite and what the music business is really like. And so one of their things by the end of the day, or by the end of the session that we were with them, we were set and designated four or five kids per artist, because there were about three or four other artists that were up there with me, kind of showing the kids the ropes and how to write songs and what to write about, what not to write about, and write with feeling and all that. So it was a really great experience for me, and I got three or four students. They were all high school students, and they wanted to pursue their music careers, and I was there to kind of bust their bubble and tell them that it's not all sunflowers and sunshine and happiness. It's got to run it through the trenches a little bit, you know? And all of them were looking at me wide-eyed, which was... They expected me to have so much knowledge. I guess like, I had to be their Yoda for the day, and it was stressful. But at the end of the day, we got into the governor's studio. We had the piano, and we were writing songs. There was a drummer and a piano player, and I was playing guitar for this group of people. These kids, you know, starting. They were 16, 15, 17, you know, all kind of high school age. And they at the exact same age as I was when I started music. So I'm like, God, I wish I had this. But it was a great experience.
I love going to speak to college students about stuff like that, and like
they know more than you.
Yeah, they do. They really do. And I tell them all the time. I was like, "Who here wants to work in radio?" They raise their hand. I'm like, "Put your hand down."
You don't.
Yeah. So you just tell them. You get real with them. So, but yeah, as we were, I don't know if we're talking about it off the air or when we were talking about the album celebrating its I think 1 year anniversary. So let's just recap the album and talk about the title track and the inspiration. And if folks want to hear it, where can they hear it?
Yeah, definitely. Child of Mississippi. I think it's 1 year. Don't quote me on that because I can't keep track of my
notes. It all runs together.
It really does. As the years go by, it just kind of all turns into a smudge. Well, it's been about a year since I released Child of Mississippi. It's doing really, really well. Wrote it on my oak table, my dining room table at my parents' house, and we just sat there and we wrote it in one day, and Mom helped out, and I did the melody. She helped with some lyrics, and it turned out to be the greatest song I've ever written so far. So far, it's one of the greatest songs.
Where did you record that, and do you remember the musicians that you worked with? I mean, was it your band? Because you do have your own.
Mm. See, with the studio, it's different. I learned that studio musicians are a thing, you know.
Oh, dude, they are incredible. But there are some artists that will not record. They won't use them. They'll bring their own. So mm-hmm. Did you have the option to use your own? Or?
Well, I was probably offered the option, but it was the best bet for us to go ahead and have a band that he got them out of different states like Ohio and Tennessee and Texas. So they had a lot of different musicians that came together, and they sent him the tracks, and they put them together, mixed them. And then I came in last to put down vocals.
So oh, wow. So everything was done prior to you arriving.
Yes. I was stressful.
Where did you record the album?
It was at Creative and Dreams Music Network. It was at Paul Bueno's up in, I think he's in Franklin, Tennessee.
Okay.
We did it in his home studio, which it's a great album for a home studio.
It always amazes me the quality that you'll find in a small studio. I mean, can you imagine walking into RCA, you know, Studio B right there in Nashville, walking into Wishbone.
They're massive.
I mean, and
it's terrifying. And then you start to think about the people that have been there before you and recorded albums. They're like, oh my God, I'm standing on hallowed ground. I'm just some Mississippi girl. Like, oh yeah. It's stressful. I've worked in a few studios that are like that. Mm. When I was, my very first album that I recorded when I was 16, I think I was 16. And I had the opportunity to go record at Jeff Cook Studios in Fort Payne, Alabama. And that studio, let me tell you, was just like everything you imagine a studio would be.
Mm-hmm.
And all the movies that you watch and what you expect a studio, it was exactly like that.
Wow.
They had different rooms for different things, and they had this big open space with a mic coming down from the ceiling, and you're just singing into a window where the engineer's at. So,
right.
And then you have everybody in the room with the engineer just staring at you.
Oh, so, yeah.
God.
Could everybody in the room just turn around?
Can I turn around? Please, just don't look me in the eyes. Stress.
But... we were talking earlier about the talent pool. Todd Tillman, you're going to be doing something with him coming up soon. Mm-hmm. He's got his Christmas show.
Yes.
Touring with Chapel Heart earlier this year, like we mentioned off the air, Hannah Everhart. When you first got in, did that amaze you as far as not only the amount of encouragement? I saw that you did get the chance to go a few places with Chapel Heart. Yeah. So this Mississippi band of misfits, what's that like?
It's a really tight-knit community, I think, especially in Meridian, but statewide, I think that all the musicians kind of stick together. They play the same places, so they're going to see each other every now and again. So Mississippi is just, it's the birthplace of wonderful musicians, yeah. Be it country, R&B, rap, whatever it is. There's so many great artists in the state, and we all kind of stick together. And as for the pandemic last year, I think I speak for all the musicians. It was the hardest thing to go through,
right?
Because that's your job.
Oh, and that's your lifeline.
This is my job, and this is my career. This is, I've sunk everything into this.
Mm-hmm.
So I depend on it, and this is what I love to do. And it's so difficult when you're missing live audiences and singing in front of people, and instead of doing these online shows, which is enough to give your fans what they want, so they can see you and hear you and
right.
See how you're doing, and I can see how they're doing. They can talk to me via internet, but there's just nothing like being with people and talking to them and hugging their necks. Bless you.
Well, thank you. I'm over this stupid thing.
But I've missed it so much, and getting on the road with Chapel Heart and playing in front of people and going to different states I've never been to before after the pandemic just quenched the thirst of being in public.
So where did you get to go, and what were some of the venues that you got to play?
Well, there were a lot of different places. Some of them were honky-tonk. Some of them were big stages. It depended on the show, you know? I've been in Richmond, Virginia, and that was the Canal Club, I think, over there. That was the first time I've been to Virginia, especially Richmond. It's very different
than
Mississippi. And I don't get out much. I've only been to maybe, before I went on tour with the girls, I've only been to like 7 or 8 states,
right.
All in the South. So Richmond, Virginia, to Tennessee, to Louisiana, then the big haul, the big trip was to South Dakota. Okay. And we all rode in a bus together. To South Dakota. And that was...
I was going to say, that must have been nuts.
That was insane. It was absolutely insane because we had to overnight... I forget what state we were in, but it was a good 22, 23-hour haul straight there.
Right.
We didn't stop at a hotel, but they just switched drivers, and we just all hung out in the bus. And it was an overnight from them opening for ZZ Top.
Mm.
And so we went straight from there to Sturgis.
Mm.
Now, Sturgis.
I got some stories about Sturgis.
You know, you talk about a whole different world out there. It is an entirely different universe.
You will walk in there and just go,
oh my God. The beginning is a lot of double takes because I'm not used to seeing the things that are seen at Sturgis. Just the outfits and the clothing of choice was very questionable. To my Christian values.
My angelic eyes are not used to seeing things. Such sinful things.
So many fishnets. Like, I can't. Oh, my God. And that was it. It was just fishnets. It was really interesting.
Trust and believe, there is nothing in the world like Sin City. It will blow your mind. And you don't even have to hit the strip. You can go to Fremont Street, the experience. That's what they call it. And, It's
nuts. Like with Sturgis, I've heard so many stories about it because I have a lot of friends who are bikers and a lot of dads who are bikers, you know, that I know. And so my dad would not allow me to go there without him because he knows about Sturgis. And when you hear about it, you imagine the worst case scenario with rival gangs and bikers coming out to pretty much murder each other on grounds. So Dad's like, well, I'm going to be there. I'm like, you're going to get a plane to come up here to hang out? He's like, no, I'm just going to drive. So my dad got in his little Dodge truck, and he takes along Tiger, one of our friends, Tiger, and they sit in a vehicle together. God bless him. God bless Tiger for dealing with Dad for 23 hours.
I've driven back from South Dakota before.
It's insane. Yeah. It is so much land and so much corn. I can't get over the amount of corn that I saw. Every time I would go to sleep and wake up 3 hours later, there was just more corn.
More corn.
And three houses per 80 square miles.
Yep.
It was insane.
Yep. And I'll say this. I haven't been to Vegas, but I've been to New Orleans. And I've been to Bourbon Street. So I think it's got to rival what he's got in New Orleans, in Vegas. I got kicked out of a vampire bar. And
Tell that story, please.
I wasn't a vampire.
Oh, that makes sense. That's
basically the gist of it. But
you didn't sign your life over for
it was a secret bar, and you're supposed to have a secret code to get in.
Did you?
And we just snuck in. And apparently they know if you didn't give them the code. So they like chased us down.
I'm just imagining you walking into a vampire bar that I could be the one to throw you out because it's obvious.
It wasn't like it was an upstairs bar. So okay. it apparently it's only like a certain night of the week or a month that they do it because the guy that was with us was like, I was here last time and we didn't have to have a secret code. We could just walk up there. You just had to go do a knock on the...
One of those speakeasies.
It doesn't look like a door. It looks like a part of the wall. And so you just knock on the door and like it opens up and you go upstairs, right? And he said last time he was there like a month ago, it was fine. So we tried to go there. Apparently it was vampire night.
It disappeared. They moved city.
It was
to
so
city.
Freaky too, because when we walked up there, everybody in there was like, kind of turned and looked at us, and I was like, I don't think we should probably leave.
They could smell you. That's what it was.
Or they could smell
you.
Warm blooded
people right? walking
they're,
in.
They were like, it got hot in here all of a sudden. So yeah, that's New Orleans for you.
Drop your line.
Leave it alone. He sees us. He loves us.
Negative. I was just trying to get out without getting my blood sucked.
Nah, New Orleans was awful. It was awful and amazing at the same time. I mean, when you go based on smells, it was terrible. But the experience was
really good. As soon as you turn down Bourbon Street, it's like, whoa.
It's a very specific slap in the face, to be fair. It's very specific, and you can't describe it.
I just go to Pato's.
Bodily fluids.
And sit at the piano bar.
And crepes. That's what it smells like.
I just sit at the piano bar in the corner of Pato's and drink. And have fun.
Watch people.
That's my New Orleans thing. I don't care about saints and sinners. I don't care about that stuff.
Well, I told him. I said, I'll take him to Vegas. He's going to go with me to Bourbon Street because I've never been.
Yeah.
You've never been to Bourbon Street?
Nah.
Oh, wow. It's fun.
It's fun just to buy a beer on the street.
Your eyes look dead when you said that. It's so much fun.
Oh, well, I told him because he asked me about it. I said, go on Thursday and leave on Sunday morning because after that, you've done everything. There's no reason to stay a week in New Orleans.
Mm-mm.
Like, go on Thursday, start drinking, and then sober up on Sunday morning and leave. And you've done everything you need to do.
Take the train. Just take the train.
That's what I did.
That's all you got to do is take the train.
Take the train, because then you can sleep on the way back.
Yep.
That's what we did. It was exactly what we did. So, after we got kicked out of the bar. And
Vampire
we won bar. Some radio awards, too, at the World War II Museum. So, that was fun. Oh, we got sidetracked. But, that's okay, though. I think my buddy Zach has been to New Orleans a few times. You know Zach Bridges. He's a great guy. We were talking to him about how he has, you know, he does the music thing, but he also works as an X-ray tech. And, you know, when he was on The Voice, mm-hmm. he had to, like, get, you know, off for, like, 6 weeks or however much they...
Did he get fired?
However much time. No, they let him go.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So we were wondering, like, what do you do if you're not performing to make ends meet? And you have a list of best jobs that you've had or worst jobs that you've had? So, what's that?
Oh, wow. Well, let's start with the first one where when the COVID hit and everybody was out of a job, especially musicians, it was really difficult to have that income, you know? So, I was blessed with a wonderful family. And my mom and my dad are very supportive of me. They didn't really throw me to the curb when I told them that I wanted to become a musician and possibly fail, you know? So, but they've supported me the entire way during COVID. I've stayed with them. They've taken care of me. And they still let me pursue my career. You know, and not have to worry about getting a job and doing that. But
right.
So music is my job.
Music
my
is
number
your
one
job.
Today it's my job, you know. Back then, back in the day, trying to think of my worst job that I ever had.
I was like, do you remember your first one? Did you have a name tag?
Oh no.
Because it doesn't count as a first job until you get a job with a name tag.
That's true. That's true. Because I did do a lot of summer jobs and raking lawns. And my mom worked at a wedding venue. And that was a very eventful job, I think, because you met a lot of bridezillas.
Oh, God.
Which was the best thing ever when you don't have to work there and you're also 16. No, it was in Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Which is even better, though, because it was in Helen, Georgia, and it was Bavarian themed. Everything was German.
Oh, wow.
Like, everything was German themed. My mom worked at a chapel there. It was on the outskirts, but Magnolia Terrace, I think, was the name of it.
Okay.
Well, I said I have a wedding this weekend in Meridian.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone's getting married. Everyone's getting married these days.
Well, yeah. Look at the pot calling the kettle black.
I'm getting married soon.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Everyone's getting married, them.
Yeah, because you got engaged, was it the night before the songwriter competition or two nights? I think it was close.
I think it was two nights.
It was close.
We had the competition on Saturday, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I got engaged to I had somebody ask me to marry him, which was crazy enough.
That's usually how being engaged works.
I know, but it's when you think about it,
right.
Somebody who's signing their life away to this point. So I was engaged on Thursday because it was at Squealers and there was a show and they always do shows on Thursday. So yeah, it was 2 days. I was engaged and I played the competition.
Yeah.
Now, back to the job.
The worst job.
It's like the worst best job.
Okay.
And
it's like radio.
It's like the worst best job.
Yeah.
You know? I worked at an animal hospital in Meridian. That was my first pretty much official job. I had a W-2 and all that. So that's when it's official.
Right.
Slam. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's his cut.
I had the scrubs I had to wear every day, and I worked as the receptionist at the clinic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, I was going to say, because everybody usually, I want to work with puppies and kitties.
Yeah. It's 10% of the time.
Yeah, try working with animals that want nothing to do with you and want to escape and bite you.
No, exactly. And I have scars to this day on my arms and my hands from being bit by like ferrets and gerbils and parrots and cats and dogs. And now, mind you, people always talk about how wonderful it is working in an animal hospital, which it is. I loved it. I loved helping people, like setting their appointments. And you weren't just the receptionist. You pretty much did everything.
Yeah.
Minus surgery and everything like that. But you help with the animals, you help get their medications and things of that nature.
You get to do the pens and whatnot too and cleaning that out, or do they have people for that?
For the pens? Oh, yeah. You had to do that at the beginning. You got to work your way up the ranks. You got to start at the bottom, then you move your way up and clean it out so much dog poop. And it was super fun. Now, you had your regulars that come in, and then you had the terrors, which I call the chihuahuas, that would always come in and just try to rip my whole arm off. And they have three teeth in their head, and they're like 97 years old, and they're on their last breath every single day. I don't know how they survive.
You're trying to scare them so they have a heart attack. Boom!
Yeah. Just terrifying. Chihuahuas were the worst to work with. Like, all the power to people who own chihuahuas. There's some really sweet ones.
Yeah, punsies.
Yeah, the punsies.
Punsies. We called them, kick them and punsies. You're the shih tzus and the ankle biters,
you know.
And they will bite.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Like, how much pain can a little chihuahua inflict?
You have no idea. The one tooth they have in the front of their mouth,
ooh.
And they just, it digs in like a dagger.
Yeah.
And it just gets infected and gross, and your hand just swells up about 14 times the size that it usually is.
And they're ugly. I'm sorry. If you own a chihuahua, God bless you.
You're dog shaming.
I am, but you know what? They're just ugly.
But the best dogs that I've ever had, I've never had on purpose a purebred animal or anything like that.
Because,
mutts. Yeah, I've always had mutts, or if they look like a lab, we're going to take it home kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we always grew up with lab-looking dogs, except for there was one my dad got my mom for, it was for Valentine's Day. And it was when they first got married, and I was about a year old, maybe a year, I think. And dad got mom, took her to one of these kennels and went to the dogs. They were all little yellow lab puppies.
Oh.
They're the cutest puppies.
Yeah, they got that face.
Oh, and their ears. They're just the most precious things.
And the puppy breath.
Yes.
Puppy breath.
Gosh, I want to bottle it up.
I'm waiting for someone to write a song called Puppy Breath.
You need to.
I mean, because it's one of those things. It's like new car smell.
Mm-hmm. You can't describe it.
Yeah, it's just there. I mean, you have your colognes and you have your Chanel number fives and,
new car.
You know, puppy breath.
Puppy breath's very specific.
You just walk in and it just
make a candle.
Well, if Gwyneth Paltrow can do one.
Oh my god!
we need a puppy breath candle.
Yes. So, but my dad took my mom to this kennel, to this basket full of yellow lab puppies, and so he said, "Pick one out." And so she found that she was looking at them, and all the other ones were real hyperactive and take me home, I'm precious.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there was one that kind of stayed behind and was sitting on her butt, and the way that she sat was the way she sat her whole life. Her little legs would frog out from underneath her, and she would just be sitting.
Right.
And she looked up at my mom with these big puddle eyes, and she had a pink Dudley nose, a little pink nose.
Oh my God, I'm done.
So mom saw this dog, and she told dad, that's the one. They took it home, and we kept Honey for about 12, 13 years.
Wow.
We grew up together. She was our babysitter. She'd run us through the fields, and because we were living equipment at the time and on tree farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was paper company land, so there were just trees all over the place.
Right.
And so we backed up to about 1,000 acres of that, so mom would send us out with Honey instead of a babysitter, and she would just be with us all the time. Running around those fields and the
like
pastures.
Nana and Peter Pan.
Yeah, pretty much. But that was my working at the clinic, my least most favorite. It's like the best worst job, you know, because you got to see the worst of people.
Yeah, and the best.
And the best
animals,
of people.
Yeah.
And the animals were really fun.
What other types of work have we done?
I worked at a noodle store. A noodle store when I was living in Gainesville, Georgia.
Okay. What's a noodle store?
I don't even remember. Oodles and Noodles is what the name of it was. And so I worked at this place. And I was in the
You're shaking school. Your head. Are you familiar with the noodle store?
I know some Oodles and Noodles.
Oodles and Noodles.
Okay.
And I worked there. I was in high school. It was a thing to make some extra cash. And I worked there for maybe like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I busted my butt at that job the best that I could. And I literally busted my butt because I had the wrong shoes. Because I was dead set on wearing Converse during that time. At all times.
So are we talking Chucks or are we talking Converse?
Converse.
Okay.
The high top Converse.
Okay.
And so I'd wear those everywhere I went. And they got worn down so much there was no grip left. And back there in the kitchen on that tile where it just got wet, you would just fall all the time. And I'm just clumsy. I don't know. There was this tray on the back in the kitchen where we had to get plates and trays and whatnot. So it was just like a big shelf and metal. I bent down one day to go pick up something off the bottom shelf, and me being me, I guess I lifted my head up too fast.
Ooh.
And I just scraped my whole nose clean off. Like,
oh.
It was just the flesh just sloughed off my nose.
Like a cheese grater. Just oh, man.
Right there.
When we come back, let's talk about venues, places that you played, and then some of the people that you haven't worked with that you'd like to work with, some of the people that you've worked with that you'd love to work with again, and what's 2022 look like. It's the B-Team Podcast.
This is the B-Team Podcast, sponsored by Mammoth Power Company. The official workout gear of the B-Team Podcast. Lead from the front.
Get your shit in and go to work.
Get your gear at mammothpowercompany.com.
It's the B-Team Podcast. We're here with Emily White.
Hello.
From Meridian, whatever you call home.
Meridian.
Meridian, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you were like Meridian or House or one of those, you know, one of those, like Collinsville.
I live in Zero, but...
See?
Yeah, but Meridian.
See, for us, like Meridian and Collinsville and House, they're all the same thing. But if you get people from there...
It's a conglomerate.
It's not the same thing.
No, they
thing.
Will tell you.
Yes, it's not the same thing. Like when we say we're going to go to Jackson, we're probably just going to go to Flowood
or like Hattiesburg.
But it's Jackson, yeah. Pedal, Oak Grove,
Hattiesburg is Jackson.
Yeah, Hattiesburg is all Pedal, Oak Grove, all those places. But yeah, so that's small town folks.
Meridian, definitely. I always say Meridian because I'm right on the outskirts of town, close to Zero, but not really in Zero, but close enough to Meridian to not be Meridian. You know, it's like kind of like that in between.
It's just saying to me, I know pretty much. Almost all there is to know about Mississippi, and I don't even know about Zero. So
you're not missing too much.
So yeah, that's a new one to me, because people ask me all the time whenever they have to go somewhere. Breck, where's this at? Where's that at? Where's this? I'm like the geography person.
It's the towns that matter that you know
from Mississippi.
Zero, I live there, but that's there's not a lot going on. It's a real small town.
So
real small.
Emily lives there. It's called One. It's not called Zero.
One. Wow.
It's not called Zero. It's called One.
One.
So, okay. Well, I don't know if there are any cool music venues in Zero to play. Maybe just the...
There's a catfish shop.
Flatbed truck, you know, that we've all been on before.
There's a catfish shop.
That sounds like fun.
At the One Four-Way.
That sounds like fun. But we're talking about venues. And what are some of the venues that you've played that you like, that are your favorite?
Mm-hmm.
And some that you would like to play? And then maybe some that you played and you just don't want to play ever again.
Ever again. Yeah. I'm not going to name names on that one, but my most favorite I was talking about at the break is the Crimson Moon Cafe. That place, it's in Dahlonega, Georgia. It's one of the hometowns. I think it is the actual hometown of Zac Brown. And I forgot about the story until I just mentioned it. It was at the Crimson Moon Cafe, downtown Dahlonega, Georgia. And the place is kind of...
North Georgia College.
Yeah. And it was right there in downtown. I mean, the college was down the street, and then they had a Starbucks on there, but nobody went to Starbucks. They went to the Crimson Moon Cafe because the coffee was better, the service was better, they had music there all the time.
Everything's better than Starbucks.
I agree. So it's a little coffee shop, good hangout spot. They had Wi-Fi. A bunch of college kids would come up. There was an upstairs green room, and I played there a few times. But just the feeling of the room and the feeling of the atmosphere was so great because on Sundays, they'd have a bunch of old-timers that would come in. They would play bluegrass every Sunday. It's like 12 o'clock to 1 or 2. And it was just a free-for-all. Nobody really came up there and specifically was playing. They didn't advertise it as so-and-so was playing. It was just a picking and grinning every Sunday, bring an instrument, and get on stage. It was like an 8x8 stage. It was very small. So we had a bunch of people packed up on there. It was great. One of my favorite places. Real small town. And I got to meet Zac Brown there for the first time in my life. It was so great. And I'm trying to think of my worst places because I always try to find the silver lining in all the experiences, you know?
But I mean, you're playing like dive bars, like
there's also
like Roadhouse where you're playing behind a cage.
There's some really
and stuff
bad,
like that. Do they even do that anymore?
There's some really bad ones that I've been to that I've played at. But not to mention names, but there were some in Alabama that were a little sketch, you know.
Surprise, surprise.
A little sketch. And there was just writing all over the walls. It was kind of like Shenanigans, you know, the place Shenanigans, but really grungy, very grungy and dark. And it was...
But like you need a tetanus shot when you leave?
Yeah, pretty much. Never go barefoot.
Is that and or penicillin?
Yeah, both. Just might as well cover all the bases. I've been to a lot of great places, a lot of sketch places, but the best stories come out of the honky tonks, you know. With,
of course,
with things dive hanging bars. Up the walls, those are the best ones.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to play Red Rocks because that's one of those, like Bima was saying, it's one of those bucket list things that you want to do. But you got to really be somebody to be at the Red Rocks. So I won't get there.
I think last time I saw you perform was at the Brick House in Meridian. We had the songwriter competition. We walked across the street, Bill. Taking care of us for the after party.
Yeah.
And Bill was great. He still has he bought me a beer on his little app that I still have to redeem over there. And there's a brick written on the wall, and I didn't write it. So I don't know. We found it. We just found it there.
I don't know any other bricks.
Yeah.
I just think it's ironic it's on a brick.
It's great. Because I don't know who it was. But yeah, my buddies, Shank and Mame, I got them, you know, told Bill about them. I got them booked there. So when they went, they were like, hey, look. Rex here. So I don't know. But yeah, so you like playing the Brick House? That's a cool spot.
Yeah, the Brick House is great. It's one of the only places really in Meridian, downtown Meridian, except for the brewery that just opened up. They have the outside seating area and the patio, but that's prime real estate Meridian where Brick House is. I mean, you're coming off the bridge, going into downtown. It's right there on the corner. The outside venue is great. They have covered stage out there in the little corner, and it's a wonderful spot, especially
lots
in the summertime.
Lots of beer.
Yes. They have... like 50 some odd
so good
craft beers there. Mm-hmm. So it's a really, really great spot.
I got to talk to Bill because he told me last time, you know, Miller High Life, one of my favorites, the champagne of beers, November and December, they make a champagne bottle of Miller High Life and you can only get it in November and December. So he said he's going to try to get some. So I have to go talk to him and see if we can see if I can get me a champagne bottle New Year's Eve, champagne of beers right there at the Miller High Life.
It's like the most redneck shit I've ever heard in my life.
See? Exactly.
We're not redneck. We're simple.
The champagne of the Miller High Life is just like me. It thinks it's a lot more classy than it is.
It's very true. Yeah, I can see that.
The champagne of beers.
We were talking about PBR earlier. It's kind of like,
That's mine too.
Yeah, the PBRs. The $1 beers.
PBR, Miller High Life, and then I go with crap.
Some of the best shows I've ever seen have been in the smaller venues. Thanks, B. Some of the smaller venues, because you have an intimacy with a crowd that you don't.
Yeah.
And in a major venue, and it gives you an opportunity to work out new material, and again, you get that rapport. and they're close enough, again, if they don't have a spotlight, to see their reaction.
I've always learned that the smaller venues, well, they're the scariest ones, but they're also the most rewarding when it comes to being able to see all of your audience members and making eye contact and talking to them. And it's like, ah, I see you, love you too, kind of thing, you know? And you get to really be with them.
Now, what's it for you when you're performing and have someone singing your lyrics with you? I was going to say, that's got to be one of the greatest feelings in the world because they're singing you to you.
The thing is, this time last year, I didn't have that. Mm-hmm. We talked about it, I think, and that was one of my dreams, is just to be in this arena or even in a room or playing a show and be singing one of the songs that I wrote with my hands and played on my guitar that I wrote myself, and having somebody in the audience, having a fan out there, just sway into the music and singing the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been happening recently with Child of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And I start it, and people hoop and holler because they know the song. And I start playing it, and they get to singing along with it. I'm just like, stop.
Now, I know we're getting engaged. He's in the military, or was in the military?
He is in the military.
Okay, I was going to say, so there's some travel for him? I mean, or is he stationary?
He's stationary. Okay. He's based. He's in the Air Force over there at Keyfield.
Okay.
And so he's at a pretty stable job there. He's not moving around anywhere.
Okay.
That was one of the prerequisites for me marrying him. Like, I'm not moving to Utah. Like, we're not doing that. So.
So I was curious because one of the biggest obstacles that people have, and I tell people this all the time, be passionate about what you want, because when you get it, decisions have to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have somebody that understands and gets what you do, it can make life hell.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, you're on stage, you're singing, you're going to have female fans that follow you, you're going to have male fans that follow
I've
you.
I've had that conversation with him. Trust me, I definitely have had that conversation.
It's not for everybody.
He's 100% on the fact.
Oh, I met him. He's one of the coolest people I've ever met.
He's all for me. He's all for supporting me. I told him when I was going on tour with Chapel Heart, like, I'm going to be gone for, I don't know how long. It could be a month. It could be 4 months. It could be 6 months. He's like, bye.
You got a cell phone? You got, like, FaceTime?
Okay,
call me.
Great. Bye. Have fun. Follow your dream. Have fun. Bye. Send me pictures. Like, all right.
So,
you need somebody who's supportive of you.
Mm-hmm.
It goes a really long way, so you don't have to explain yourself all the time.
Right.
Know? And be like, well, I have band practice. Like, who's going to be there? Are the guys? Oh, how long are you going to be there? Where is it? You know, it's not like that. I just say, I'm going to go practice with the guys. Mm-hmm. All right. What time are you going to be back? I'm like, probably 2 hours, 3 hours, but I'll let you know if I'm late.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have fun.
Well, see, when you get people
like
who
possessiveness,
don't
I've been with those before that are so possessive.
Yeah. When you don't understand what we do, how we do it, and I say we because the first year I was in radio, ask me how many concerts I did. First year, guess.
Just the very first?
Very first
breaking
year in
into
radio.
The scene, you don't have a lot of
How many concerts do you think I did my first year?
Mm.
365 days in a year, but you tell me how many.
36.
No.
112.
Were you ever home?
No, because I was networking. I was establishing myself. I would take any opportunity to put myself in front of someone, whether it was a charity organization, whether it was an artist, whether it was a promoter, whether it was a marketing director at the Save Mart Center in Fresno, the Shoreline Amphitheater. I networked. I built promotions, and I knew the work ethic of people around me. Nobody was going to outwork me. Nobody. So to be a part of this, you have to understand my drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can either be a part of it or not. And the minute you make me choose, you're going to lose.
Every because, time. You do what you love, and it's not even a job.
I haven't worked in 20-something years.
Yeah.
But I've watched so many artists with incredible talent, with an incredible drive, just get beaten down. Mm-hmm. By someone who just didn't understand it. And it was funny because I only dated jocks.
Yeah.
EMTs date EMTs.
I know, but we've learned as musicians not to date other musicians.
Yeah.
It's just,
that's the exception to the rule with this, because we'll never be around each other long enough unless you wind up touring close.
Yeah, unless you started off dating and you both made it big and then you start touring together or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
That's different.
It's, you know, people go, oh, well, you're in the same industry. You must have a lot in common. Well, we might, but we're never going to see each other.
Yeah.
So it's great to see that you've got that support. And with your parents,
mm-hmm.
especially with mom, who
My mom runs the show. Let me tell you, she is the one behind the scenes doing a lot of the footwork. She and I are the dream team. I mean, we put together gigs and book our shows, all the promotion that we do, and talking to people and contacts. My mom is amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got an incredible asset, because there are so many people that have no idea what's involved. They think I show up, I sing, I leave, I go home. Yeah, no, you don't.
Not anymore. You start like that when you're 17, but then when you get on down the road and get a little bit of clout behind you, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot more to it than that. It's the years put into it, and that's the thing with the students that we had over at the Max. We had like 30 kids there all together. And they were asking all these questions about the music industry. I'm like, what's it really like? Big starry eyes. You're like, what's it like? Is it everything we imagine? I said, no. Mm-hmm. You have that every now and again, you have those moments where it's like, oh my God, I'm actually doing this.
Right.
And then most of the other time, it's kind of like, well, I have to get this done. It's work.
Right.
It's not just sitting around and playing gigs all the time and having the time of your life and getting hammered at dive bars in Alabama, you know?
Yeah, they think you're sitting at home just chilling until you go play.
It's a job.
No.
If you treat it like a job, then it'll all come back to you.
You're in a good place. I mean, you've got a hell of a role model with mom, so.
Yeah, my mama is wonderful. My dad is my biggest supporter. Can't carry a tune in a bucket, but I love him anyways. I got all my talent from my mama, like 100%.
Does he play a mean air guitar?
He really does. He can sing the stew out of some karaoke, though. Let me tell you, he's a crowd pleaser. I mean, the crowd loves him when he gets up there and starts singing some Hank Williams or any kind of classic country. And he's up there singing and family tradition, and people are screaming and hooping.
We have Mississippi's own version of the Carter family here.
100%. Dad plays the triangle. Love it.
So what's 2022 hold for us? Do we have anything that we're looking at doing? I mean, because you look like a goal-oriented person. I don't see you as the type that just goes, which way the wind blows.
No, you definitely have to have something in your back pocket all the time. Now, we do have some really great things coming up next year, as always. I mean, every month is always something really big happening. And trying to press on and further my career as much as I can, one step at a time. Because when I first started, I always try to bite off too much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, and you get stressed out and you think it's too much, you get overwhelmed with it, and that's when musicians quit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is just a lot. I can't do this.
Right.
But now I've been doing it for a while, and the next year I do have a lot of big dreams and big plans, but you got to take it one step at a time.
Right.
And some really great opportunities are coming my way, and a lot of great meetings with really great people. So I'll keep tuned. Oh, I haven't even plugged my website the entire time.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll have that available for you on the B-Team podcast description, but you can find...
Yeah, it's emilywhitemusic.com, just like my name, with music at the end of it, .com. It has all my calendar dates so far. I don't have too much going on till the end of the year, but hopefully after the season and Christmas and Thanksgiving, because I like to stay home, you know, during the holidays.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, because you've got the... Tillman event coming up. You've got the Christmas festival, or
in Louisiana?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a Christmas festival. It's like a settlement down mm-hmm. there. And I learned when I talked on the phone with Stuart, the one who booked me. He said we down here in Louisiana call them parishes. Y'all call them counties. Like, that's funny to me. I never heard of parish. They're parishes.
I didn't know what a parish was until I watched True Blood.
I still don't know what parishes are.
Yeah, I watched True Blood and I went, so that's a parish.
Is it just because when I think of parish, I think of wetlands?
Yes,
you know, just like little mounds of earth coming out of water. That's mm-hmm. what I think of. It's just Louisiana.
So we still writing? I mean, because I'm sure you get asked this, but what's an average amount of songs for you?
An average amount?
Yeah, as far as writing,
finished product or just like little snippets?
Snippets. Snippets.
I have a shoebox.
Oh, I was going to say, because most people do. They have that notebook.
Mm-hmm. And my mom is the same way. She'll sit there and she'll be listening to... She was telling me yesterday, I think it was yesterday or maybe the day before, I was listening to this podcast and they said something about Lace and Regret or Lace and Broken Promises or something like that. She's like, I had to write that down.
So yeah.
It's White Lace and Broken Promises, because that sounds like a great song title.
Yeah.
So she has this book she just writes stuff down in, and I write stuff down and pray for the best, you know?
When you write, do you write with an album in mind?
We try to drop singles. We drop the album, then we drop singles off the album.
Okay.
Until we get to record some more material, then we're going to release those as singles and possibly put together another album from those singles.
Do you feel you get a better gauge of where your audience is going?
And that's what we're going to be doing now, is recording some more material, gauging, like you said, gauging the audience is the best way to do it. You release a certain single off there that you think will do good at this place, like in Europe or Australia. And Stand By Your Man was one of the examples, because I released Stand By Your Man overseas in the UK, and it hit the charts. And
nice.
So it's doing really well. Stand By Your Man. Tammy Wynette. Yeah. Stand By Your Man.
Tammy's, yeah.
And so it's doing a killing over there in the UK and Australia, and there's some Germany listeners and things like that. But it's doing really good. It's classic country. So I know that I do country. And I've always said I do classic country, but now that it's doing really well and the numbers are coming back, I'm going to stick with some Tammy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, yeah. The one thing that I always wanted to do, and the reason that I got into this, is because I loved having the ability to take someone anywhere they wanted to go, because music does that.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear a song on the radio and remember where you were the first time you heard it, who you were with. I got asked by my wife why we don't have a song.
Y'all don't have a song?
Why don't we have a song?
There's too many.
And 54 years of life, no woman I've ever been with has had a song with me. And I'll tell you why. I'm very protective of my music. I don't want to turn on something and go, I can't listen to that. Why not? Because it reminds me of her. So.
And it was a good song and I miss it.
Yeah. And it's funny, because I had the opportunity to sit down and talk to somebody.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I said, did you ever write anything for anyone? No. That doesn't mean I wasn't inspired, but I never wrote a song for anybody, because they were very personal to me. And I just...
Especially, I feel like from the writer's aspect or the musician's aspect, when they write a song for somebody specifically, and what happens if you end up hating that person? Then you can never listen to that song ever again.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it. I've never written a song for somebody specifically.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you ever get asked that?
Like, who is the song about? I mean, it's about an experience.
Yeah.
It's always about the experience and not...
You're not Taylor Swift.
Yeah. It's always about the experience and not the person. I want to write a song to where it's not going to have a name in it, you know, that's going to remind me of them. But
right.
But we always, as writers and musicians, we write about experiences.
Oh, yeah.
In our
experiences.
The things we've been through. So some of them might be about breakups, but you're going to make it to where it's about... everybody can relate to it. There's going to be at least one person that's going to relate to the exact same story.
Right.
You write for the people, you know, and also for yourself, but you write for the people to let them relate to it, you know?
Yeah.
I know I'm talking a lot. Sorry.
No, it's totally fine. No, we could do this all day. I mean, like I said, there was a reason why I started with you. And it's amazing to sit back and watch how you've developed, because I keep tabs on people. I always do. Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, no.
Yeah, trust and believe. I keep tabs.
Get eyes everywhere.
Yes. But I'm excited to see what's in store for you for 2022.
Got a lot coming.
It's going to be a good time.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking about venues. I was going to say, because I know you get to go here and there. You ever get up to Nashville at all?
Sometimes.
Because I'm curious to see what your impression of Nashville is like.
Well, now, when I was a child...
Because you got to perform at Tootsie's.
Yes. I have, when I was 12. So there was there was a time when Mom was doing really good in Nashville, and she was the first signed artist onto Tootsie's Orchid Lounge record label.
Mm-hmm.
So she was up there, and she was singing almost every single weekend, and some weekends she would bring us with her to the Smoky Bar, and we would sit in that corner, you know, downstairs in that corner booth right there. And we'd sit there. I would sit there with my brother or my dad, and we'd just hang out and listen to Mama sing.
Mm.
So I remember it back then. That was in the early 2000s, mid-2000s.
Right.
And so it was very different than it is now.
Oh, yeah.
It's very commercialized now. And because I remember Tootsie's as the epitome of a dive bar.
Yeah.
It's the epitome of a dive bar that you would have celebrities come in and just... hang out and be themselves.
Just walk on and want to play.
Yeah, that's, and you let them, because you can't say no to Keith Urban. You know, it's like, yeah, sure, get on stage. Oh, my God.
Again, one more time, I want to remind everybody, emilywhitemusic.com. You can pick up singles. You can pick up download albums, concert information, things of that nature. Also available, we're doing social media.
Yeah, we have Facebook, Instagram. I have a TikTok now.
Oh, really?
I know, right? It's great. You should definitely check that out.
Yeah, I was going to say, what happens on the TikTok page?
Oh, no, it's just recently I've just started posting back on it. So I have like 3 or 4 videos. But if y'all want to see me swinging an axe and driving a tractor, you know, just...
Speaking of axe swinging, I believe Brother Breck is somewhere over there doing push-ups because I can't see him. So, for Brother Breck, I'm Brian B. Montgomery. She is number one.
Thank you.
My pleasure, hon. It's the B-Team Podcast.
You've been listening to the B-Team Podcast. Catch BMO and Breck weekday mornings on Mississippi's Superstar Country, Kix 96.
A Boswell Media station.
Listen live at kix96news.com.
To become a sponsor, appearance and guest on the show, or for more information, contact them at btmpodcastms@gmail.com.